Today, what we're doing is we are highlighting small groups. It's part of our September kickoff. September is kind of when we restart the clock, if you will. This morning is Step Up Sunday for all the kids in there, so they're having a great time. They're all moving up to the new class. Kid Check, the whole thing that we've been talking about for the last month and a half is starting today. So there's a lot going on with them. So what we're doing in here is we're focusing on small groups because what we want to do is it's something that we want to encourage people to do. And what we want to look at this morning, and before we go into what we're actually going to be doing this morning, I want to spend just a couple minutes doing a little teaching. We got this up here, Paul? We're working on it. I just realized I'm going to step on that. All right. Because here's the thing we're going to do this morning. Not that one. We're going to get to it. Here's the thing. We want to go through this whole idea this morning that circles are better than rows. Okay, now, we got this. Circles are better than rows. And you'll notice that we actually have them here. We have circles and we have rows. And that's what we're going to look at. Because if you've been at Hope Chapel for any length of time, somebody will have come to you probably and said, hey, you should come join our small group, our discipleship family, that's what we call. Or you've heard me talk about it from the front. Said, oh, you should get in a small group, you should get in a discipleship family. And usually the responses go something like this. I already have enough relationships, right? I have friends. I don't really need more friends. I don't have the bandwidth for more friends. And they're all weird anyway, okay? Which is true, by the way. That's okay. But you know what? So are you, right? We're all just kind of strange people. I also hear this. I'm an introvert. I prefer being alone. Groups is all weird. The reason I come and sit by myself is because I don't like to talk to people. I'm an introvert. Okay. Or I hear people say this. I'm too busy. I got so much going on in my schedule. I can't commit to something else. I mean, you're talking about getting together with people. I already got so much going on in my life. I can't do this. Or, and people don't actually say this. This is different and kind of scary, and I'm really uncomfortable. I don't want to do it. That's what they say inside. Okay. But the truth of the matter is, from the very beginning, Hope Chapel said that that lives lived in community is what causes us to grow. It's what, it's how we're supported, it's how we're changed. So, when Jesus left, just before he left, the night before he died, he was with his disciples and he said this. He said, a new command I give you, and we've talked about this before, this was kind of because you didn't get new commands. And so when he said, I have a new command, the disciples were like, what is it? What's this new command? This is amazing. And he says, love one another, to which point they thought, well, that's not new at all. That goes all the way back to Moses when he said, love each other, right? And love God. But he says, no, as I have loved you, that's how you love one another. In other words, his whole point being that you love each other the way I demonstrated love for you and I did give my life for you. And then he goes on to make this statement. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Because Jesus knew this, that the most powerful form of evangelism is a community of Christians who love each other. Straight up. And Jesus died 24 hours later, less than 24 hours, his followers were scattered. They all ran away. And then he came back to life, and there was a few people that saw him. They're like, oh, my, this is amazing. God, Jesus came back to life. And so they kind of gathered together. And so a couple months after Jesus died, there were about 100 people that were followers of Jesus. The population of the world at the time was about 150 million people. They think about 60 million of which were in the Roman Empire. And there were 100 Christ followers. About 60 years later, there was about 100,000 Christ followers, still only about 0.1% of the known world. You fast forward another 100 years, now you're at 200 years after Christ, there was now 200,000, and then it started to multiply rapidly. In the next 50 years, it went up to 2 million, it was up to 2 million, and by 300 AD, so only 300 years after Christ, actually less than 300 years, there were an estimated 6 million Christ followers in the Roman Empire. Do you know how that happened? Because it happened in a society that was against them. The government wasn't in favor of them, not yet. Most of the time, society thought they were weird people who did weird things. They wanted very little to do with them. So how did they go like that? Do you know how it happened? Here's how it happened. We read in Acts 2. This is what the church did. It says, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer. And everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together. They had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes. They ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. See? Do you know what they did? Do you know how they went from 100 people to 6 million in the span of a couple centuries? They ate together. They devoted themselves not just to the apostles' teaching, but to fellowship, to breaking bread. Guys, this should be the best thing you've ever heard. They were devoted to food. This is amazing, right? They got together. Like, we always say this, well, they devoted themselves to prayer, and it all sounds so spiritual. Do you know what they devoted themselves to? Hanging out, being together, and in the process, discussing what they learned from Jesus through the apostles, and then praying for their world. That's it. They learned. And what, I mean, Jesus had given them a mission, but what they learned was that life lived with others is a better life. See, we're a church that says people can come as they are and be changed, right? We say that all the time. We're a church where people can come as they are and be changed because everybody's welcome. No matter who you are, we want to see you, but everybody carries baggage and wounds and problems and hang-ups and habits and weird family dynamics, all these things that prevent us from living life the way God designed it. That's the way it is. We say we want to be changed. It's not just about self-improvement. That's not what it is. We want to learn to love God better, to love other people more, to love the world around us. And we can only do that in the context of community. So if you come in our church, you'll see this big poster up there at the front, which is really like our pathways. It's the way we change. It's how we grow in Hope Chapel. And you notice at the beginning when people say, hey, you're here, the first time you're here, you come to a worship service, you might come to a newcomer's lunch, you might pray for you, there's Alpha, there's different things that are going on. But if people say, you know what, Hope Chapel's my home, this is where I want to stay, I came back, this is now where I want to be, do you notice how you grow? It's in relationship. It's the number one primary way we grow. And if you want to continue to grow, if you take a look, there's all kinds, all these things are developed in the context of community and relationships. And we call them discipleship families, even though so many of us come from dysfunctional families, so the word family has all these weird connotations, we want family to be the way that God intended it. Because here's the question. What would happen if on the way out the door today, you know, everybody's left, Skeeter and I are the last two people out of the room, and, you know, we both get struck by lightning and we die, and in the process, the building burns to the ground. There's no facilities, no staff, no nothing. What happens? Do you know what happened next week? There would be church. Because people would get together. Not at my house. Probably not at Skeeter's house. But you'd get together. And people would eat together, and they would pray together, and they would talk together, and they would lean on each other, and church would continue. Because when you come here on Sunday, you're not coming to church, you're coming to a worship service. Church happens outside of Sunday. So, Solomon, one of the wisest men in history, he wrote this. And you hear this all the times at weddings, but it actually wasn't primarily for weddings. He wrote this: two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor, and if either of them falls down, one can help the other up, but pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? The one may be overpowered. Two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. Have you ever seen someone fall down financially and they had no one there to help them? Have you ever seen someone's marriage falling down and they had no one but their own family to help them? Have you ever had someone who's had an illness and they had no one to walk through it with them? You ever seen someone fall morally? There was no one to help them up? See, here's the cool thing, and this is why circles are better than rows. Group dynamics are preventative. If you wait till your life falls apart and you say to yourself, I need relationship, you're too late. And you're like, oh, I need people. Do you know why people leave church? It's because when their life falls apart, they say, no one came and took care of me. No one talked to me. No one helped me. And my first question is usually, were you connected? And well, no, I wasn't really connected. I got news for you. The staff and leaders of this church do not have the bandwidth to care for each and every one. Can't happen. That's why we do life in circles and not rows. It's kind of like a group retirement savings plan. If you wait until you need your retirement to start one, you're not going to have much of one. You kind of got to start it ahead of time. And so that's the same thing with groups, because there will be a time in your life when you need somebody. So here's the question, and here's why we're going to do what we're going to do in a second. It's this question: is there a group of people in your life who feels free to ask you are you okay? And they won't accept, I'm fine, as an answer. Do you have that? I mean, outside of your family. I'm not talking about your biological family. Is there a group of people that when they said to you, how are you doing? Are you okay? And you say, oh, I'm fine. They go, oh, hold on. Time out. I know you better than that. There's something going on. What's happening? Talk to me. Let's work through this together. Circles are better than rows. The church doesn't happen like this. It happens like that. Life change happens a little bit on Sunday morning, but it happens a lot in relationship. In October of 2006, Charlie Roberts, some of you may or may not remember this name, walked into a schoolhouse in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and shot 10 girls. Killed a bunch of them and wounded some of them. And then he shot himself. And the Amish people, this is an Amish community, a lot of you remember this story, they had nowhere to vent their anger and their frustration because the shooter himself was dead, right? There was no sense of justice or anything like that. And you would have thought that maybe they would have then exploded onto other things. And what happened was when the media went and talked to these people, they were amazed. Because I don't know if you remember the story, but instead this group of people who had just lost their daughters and their granddaughters, they reached out with grace and compassion to the Roberts family, to the widow, to the mother, and to the other people in the family. On the same day of the shooting, some of them actually visited Roberts' family to offer their condolences and to offer, you know, sympathy and comfort. The Roberts family themselves were invited to the funeral of at least one of the girls who had been shot. The Amish actually outnumbered the non-Amish at Roberts' actual funeral. They brought baskets of food. They brought gifts. They stuffed the widow and the mother's mailbox with notes expressing forgiveness and support. And the way they acted stunned the world. In an era when there was a lot of different mass shootings, this one caught the attention of people and still does to this day. And what powerful wasn't just that they forgave. It was that they forgave as a community of people. They did it together. Because they, even though they don't talk a lot about it, it was the strength of their relationships and their faith in community that allowed them to do something that most of us can't even comprehend. To do. So, when I say circles are better than rows, it's because we want to learn to live in community with each other. And we have an opportunity to make a difference. And when we learn to live like the family that God intended it to be like, then whether we are reaching out to the hurting people in our group or outside our group, it'll make a huge difference. Circles are better than rows. If it's where we learn to love God, it's where we learn to love each other, and it's where we learn to love the world.